It's a little hard to get a read on where exactly relations stand between Donald Trump and the Colombian leader, Gustavo Petro. A couple of days ago, they were trading insults and threats. Now they've had a phone call and are planning a meeting. Donald Trump said he appreciated the Colombian leader's tone in the call, and a meeting at the White House would be arranged soon. But tensions remain high in Latin America as the U.S. forges ahead with its claims on Venezuelan oil, and with threats hanging in the air that Gustavo Petro could ultimately suffer the same fate as Nicolas Maduro, the Venezuelan leader deposed by the U.S. at the weekend. Beth Dickinson is the Deputy Director for Latin America at the International Crisis Group. She joins me now from the Colombian capital, Bogota. Welcome to Radio National Breakfast.
Thanks so much for having me and for covering this story.
Thank you. Well, tell us, you're in Bogota, as we said. How tense does the situation there feel right now following the seizure of the Venezuelan leader?
So I think that what happened in Venezuela surprised, I think, a lot of us throughout the region. And Colombia has been concerned about possible contingencies from a U.S. strike in Venezuela for months now. They have been planning, for example, for the influx of new migrants should the situation become chaotic in Venezuela or in the event of a new economic collapse. Immediately, really just minutes after the strike took place, the Colombian authorities ordered 30,000 troops to the border. So that sort of gives you an indication of the level of concern. That, of course, added to this very tense relationship that you mentioned between the United States and Colombian President Gustavo Petro.
And are you seeing people coming over the border? Are they able to come over?
So as of now, the situation in Venezuela seems relatively stable and there are not influxes of migrants. But I do think that that risk remains very real. Even before the strike took place, Venezuela was in a situation economically where high levels of inflation have really made basic goods unaffordable for the average Venezuelan. We already hear stories about families limiting the number of meals they're eating per day, coping mechanisms that indicate to us that this is a stress point. So really any shock to that, which is very possible, for example, because of the oil blockade that the U.S. is imposing, sort of the lack of cash flowing through the economy. Certainly this is a real risk that I think Colombia is already prepared for.
And what should we make of the possibility of U.S. action on Gustavo Petro? As I said there, they were really ramping up the rhetoric a couple of days ago. Now they're going to have a meeting. How do you read it?
Well, this is really quite a puzzling situation, and I think has really sort of raised a lot of questions here in Colombia. Colombia is historically, for decades now, the United States' closest ally in the region, precisely on the same priorities that President Trump has emphasized in his term, counter-narcotics, migration. And so, you know, really the animosity between the two sides is inexplicable in many ways. Really what this comes down to, I think, is a personality and personal dispute between President Trump and President Petro. Petro is a demobilized former leftist guerrilla. His rhetoric has been very firm, speaking out against U.S. policies on migration, very adamantly spoke about the war in Gaza, has been opposed to the boat strikes in the Caribbean. And I think this series of sort of rhetorical disputes brought the tensions to a head. Now, they've now had this phone call, which was a bit conciliatory. Honestly, I think that we should expect these tensions to simmer until Colombia holds elections in May for a new president.
And you said you think, you know, it's relatively stable in Venezuela, but there are reports of people being detained, phone searches and so on. I guess it's pretty volatile. Is that fair?
Absolutely. So in terms of the migration situation, we haven't seen that yet. But as you mentioned, very alarming indications coming out of Caracas and about the presence of security forces and colectivos. These are sort of militias that have been aligned with the government on the streets, essentially looking for anyone that they accuse of having been supportive of the U.S. strikes. And just to explain to listeners what that means, it could be as simple as having sort of the wrong news story on your phone or in a chat. So very alarming signals. However, I think it's really worth noting today that just hours ago, the National Assembly president, who is the brother of interim leader Delcy Rodriguez, announced that there would be the release of a number of political prisoners. We are still waiting on the details, but should that proceed, I do think that it's a positive indication of good faith on the part of the authorities.
On Radio National Breakfast, I'm speaking with Beth Dickinson, the Deputy Director for Latin America at the International Crisis Group. How stable is Delcy Rodriguez's position there? She appears to be both compliant and yet defiant towards the US. How is she handling the situation, and could she face a leadership grab?
Well, I think she really is in a difficult situation. On the one hand, receiving essentially orders and dictates from the United States, many of them very difficult to swallow for the government in Venezuela that has traditionally been quite sort of outspoken about its opposition to sort of conceding to U.S. policy interests. On the other hand, Delcy Rodriguez is also undoubtedly facing pressure from those within the government who are among the most hardline. So I think here it's really worth emphasizing that some of the real hardliners who are behind the flawed elections, who have orchestrated the crackdowns on the opposition and on protests, they're still in office as ministers and others near the security forces. And so her position, I think, is really quite delicate. Now, she has a very interesting story in Venezuela because she's been focused for the last few years specifically on economic policy, which I suspect is part of the attraction for the U.S. administration. Someone who understands how to build bridges with the private sector, has a bit more of a technocratic perspective. And the real question going forward is how much room she will have to make the compromises both within the regime and also with the United States in that balancing act.
Meanwhile, we've got the opposition sort of chomping at the bit, I guess, to take power. We heard from Maria Corina Machado saying we're ready and willing to serve our people as we have been mandated. They, of course, claim, and many in the international community say, that the opposition are the legitimate winners of the last election. What do you think her next move is going to be?
Well, that's right. So in 2024, when there was a vote held, the opposition won and Maduro refused to concede or to release the full electoral results. And so a number of countries throughout the region either didn't recognize Maduro's government or recognize the opposition directly. You know, I think this is the biggest gap that's missing in what we've heard from the United States so far. Where is the voice of the Venezuelan people? Right now, this is a two-way negotiation between the United States and the regime, and there is not space as of yet or a plan that we've heard of how to incorporate the voice of Venezuelans. Whether that's directly through empowering the opposition, whether it's through elections, I think it's a space where we need to hear from the United States. The opposition itself, I think, is also, frankly, in a bit of a crisis as to how to respond. There are different views within the opposition about these U.S. operations. And so probably the first conversations need to happen within the opposition to think through a list of demands, not just for Caracas, but also for Washington as to how to proceed.
Beth Dickinson, thank you so much for breaking that all down.
Thanks so much to you.